Bibles turn to the book of Romans. I thought one of the best ways to encourage you this morning is not so much to go through another message on trials and difficulties, but to kind of get back in the saddle of where we've been in the book of Romans. We are in chapter 12 of the book of Romans. Specifically, we're looking at 9 through 21 is the section we're in. I've been trying to understand this section, but before we kind of get into the meat and potatoes of that, I think since we've had such a hiatus or a separation from where we've been, it's just been good today if we kind of review some things. And I thought some of the easiest way to review this is to take that passage at the very end of Romans chapter 11, where Paul writes and says, "For from him and through him and to him are all things. To him be the glory forever and ever." And three prepositions, if you know your English grammar, you've got this whole idea of prepositions like the word from, or the word through. I'm going to build the theme of the book of Romans around these three prepositional words. To. From, through, and to. In Romans chapter 1, if you remember, if I was to ask you a little quiz here, kind of stepping back and look at the forest a little bit before we just kind of get into the trees of Romans 12, if we get to it, is, why does Paul write this book? He's going to Spain. He's writing to these Christians who are in Rome. They're of a Jewish lot and they're of a Gentile lot. They kind of come together, kind of a mixed lot, and they're believing on Christ. And so he's going to give to them his gospel. This is what I'm preaching. So you'll know when I'm preaching in Spain, because people want to support him in his work, but they need to know what kind of work he does. So here's the work that I do. Here's the gospel that I preach. And he starts off in the very first chapter of the book of Romans, and he makes this unbelievable statement, theme about the gospel. What does he say about the gospel? He says, "I'm not ashamed of it." He says, "It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes." The gospel, when you hear the gospel, the good news, what that means is that it has the power to save people. Everyone, anyone, Jew, Greek, he's going to say, to anyone who believes. He says, "For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith." And then he talks about, he gives an Old Testament passage about how the righteous shall live by faith, kind of buttress that point that in the gospel is the righteousness of God. So whenever you talk about the gospel, you talk about salvation, these are all, many times for people who have grown up in the Christian faith, they become buzzwords, they become trigger words. Yeah, salvation, yeah, Bible, gospel, Jesus. And they just kind of blow over. You don't really put them together. A person can't get saved with pieces of a puzzle. God has got to put those pieces together, and all of a sudden it comes together and you see it click. It's kind of like one of those anagrams. You know, you look at that picture of all the, oh, I see the picture of the, you know, the dolphin jumping out of the ocean inside the picture. And so it's the same thing when it comes to spiritual realities and enlightenment. You have to understand what this whole thing is about the gospel. You can get the buzzwords and just have them out there and never understand. The gospel, this good news about Jesus Christ, centers around this one major theme about righteousness. So if you don't understand what righteousness is, you'll never understand what the gospel is, and you'll never be saved. So when it talks about in verse 16 that it's the power of God for salvation, it assumes, when you use the word salvation, the word assumes danger. Why would you talk about salvation if you're not talking about moving from point A, danger, to point B, safety? That's what salvation means. Oh, this guy came in and he was the salvation of the team. So you can use salvation in all kind of contexts, and you realize point A being it was in a low state, and now point B, it's in a higher state because of the word salvation. So anytime he talks about salvation in our own English language, let alone in the Bible, it's talking about moving from a state of danger or impending doom or destruction to a spot where you're safe. Okay? And very clear. So don't get lost in the shuffle when you hear the word salvation. You fall asleep. It's one of those stained glass window religious words, salvation. That's what Christians always talk about. No, it's the same thing when you're drowning. You're in a situation that's dangerous and you need salvation. You need to be saved from the currents or whatever so that you don't drown. So he talks about this whole idea that's the power of God for salvation. It assumes we are all in a dangerous situation. So the first thing when God does, when he begins to open the eyes of the lost, he begins to open your eyes to see, number one, this doesn't look good. I think I'm drowning. Hey, guys, anybody else smell smoke in the house? I don't know. I'm smelling smoke. So that's a good sign. It's a panicky kind of thing. I mean, it's uncomfortable, but it's like, I think I'm in danger. You think? I think you are. Yes, we've been trying to say you need to be saved, or there's salvation that the gospel offers to those who come to Christ. So you've got to have this sense of, first of all, I need to get out of point A and get to point B. And so the gospel is the power of God that moves people from point A to point B, gets people saved. And the way it gets them saved, of all things, I mean, I really didn't expect this to come out in verse 17, it's the righteousness of God that does it. Really. Righteousness of God. What does that sound like? I mean, I've heard the word self-righteous, or, you know, he's, you know, too righteous for his own good or something, but you know, what does righteousness, righteousness of God mean? That means I've got to meet up to the standard or the criteria of God's holiness and righteousness. If I go before a judge and the judge says, you violated a law and I'm here to impose a fine or a sentence, that basically he's telling me you didn't meet up to your obligations to fulfill that law on a given day and time to do those things. And since you didn't, you're unrighteous in regard to that law. And so a penalty has to be paid. We have to bring you up to speed here. Well, how do you do that? Well, you got to pay a fine, or you got to serve time in jail. That's how we bring you up to speed, so that the law is met and there's righteousness reigning, so to say. So when he talks in verse 17, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed. It's interesting, he talks about it's revealed. It's revealed in the gospel. It's because people who are lost and people who are, you know, need salvation, saving, the first thing they don't understand is that they're in a situation that's very dangerous. And what makes it dangerous? They're in an unrighteous situation. This is what makes the house burning, is that I'm under some sort of wrath from God thing. Now, God's mad at me about something. See, most people don't believe that. They don't think in those terms. You know, God's got his thing going, I got my thing going. They just live their life. You know, God's on the other side of the world doing his thing, and I'm on this side of the world doing my thing. And they just never think in terms of God having a relationship with me, and he's mad at me about something. So this first thing here, this from preposition, and this Paul's going to elaborate on this in the first three chapters, is that the first thing that the gospel does in this whole idea of saving is that the gospel saves us from, this might sound strange, but from God. Now, not just from God in sense, but from God in his wrath, okay? Because God's mad. God's upset. Because none, as he says in verse 18, right after, none are righteous. See, the issue is righteousness here. Everybody's broken the law, and God doesn't sit on his hands and say, well, okay, boys with boys. He doesn't. He's wrathful. So when he talks about the salvation, the first thing he brings onto the topic here in chapter 1 is that nobody is free from this whole thing of God's wrath. Everybody falls under it. Gentile, Jew in chapter 2. So he gets into chapter 3 and he says, all are under the wrath of God. So this little passage in Romans 11, he says, from him, through him, and to him are all things, also can be the theme for our book of Romans. So that we need to be saved from something. That's the first thing you need to understand. When the house is on fire, you begin to realize you're not picky about, you know, let's see, the house is on fire now. Do I really want to run north, south, east, or west? I don't know. I kind of like west. I'm a west kind of guy. You don't think like that. The house is on fire. The house is on fire. You're just trying to get out. And so the first thing you understand when it comes to the gospel is I need to escape from this. I'm in a current. I'm drowning. I need to get out. So if someone throws you a life jacket or throws you a buoy or holds a stick out, you don't care. So I got to be saved from where I'm at. I don't care what is given to me at this point. I just know God is wrathful and angry at me. This is personal here. This isn't just, well, you know, God's got issues with sinners and sinners, a kind of broad category. When God begins to convict somebody, he takes you out of the broad category of sinner and puts his crosshairs on you. He's mad at you for your sin. He's going to put you in hell for your sin. Whoa. I mean, that's getting personal here. Exactly right. That fire is going to consume you if you stay in the house. Oh, look, it's burning up the couch. Oh, look, it's burning up the curtains. Well, it's coming from me. See, it's not just going to be, well, it knows not to come touch me. I'm worth more than curtains. It's going to touch you. So you realize that with fire. It doesn't care. It's going to come and get you. And so you say, I got to get out of here because it seems like it wants me too. And so it's the same thing when it comes to this whole idea of salvation. So that's why he spends the first three chapters in the book of Romans dealing with this from preposition here, okay? He saves us from something. He moves us from point A to point B. He gets us out of the way of himself when it comes to wrath. If he doesn't do that, then the gospel It's not the power of God for salvation. There's no salvation. You're just going to be condemned, okay? So if it doesn't save us from God and his wrath and the things that cause that, sin, unrighteousness, things of this sort, then whatever we're going to be saved through and to is irrelevant. And that's where he's going to move into that realm later on in the book of Romans. This makes sense. You understand what he's talking about when he gets into chapter 2 and chapter 3 when he says, therefore, you know, none fear God, you know, none are good, none, there's not even one. And he says, all those who are under the law, every mouth may be closed, and all the world may become accountable to God. So God's got to save every single person from something. There's not a single person he encounters that's not in a burning house. If you get saved, you get saved in a burning house with the wrath of God hanging over your head. And it's like, I got to get out of here. Exactly right. And so you get saved from God's wrath and sin. Okay? That's not hard to figure out. We can see this in the first part of the book of Romans. We went through this in great detail. Now, this whole idea of through, I mean, what does that mean? How do we get saved? How does this happen? How do I get from point A to point B so I can get to this two aspect here? Well, it's going to be through Christ. Now, what does that mean? I'm going to put something here called faith. Now, he's going to spend a great amount of time here because you got a lot of people who understand the first part here. They understand this from thing. But boy, when it comes to the through thing, we've got all kinds of different kind of whistles and bells to say that, hey, God's not mad at me anymore. I'm not sending, I'm out of the house. In reality, Paul comes and says, nah, you're still in the burning house. No, you're still in the wrath of God. No, you haven't gotten out because you didn't come through the only way you can escape from the burning house. Well, what way is that? That's through Christ. Well, see, you got a lot of people who, once again, see, Christ can become a buzzword, can become a trigger. Now, yeah, I believe in Jesus, and they don't really know what that means. It's just a piece to a puzzle, but they don't understand how it fits together. So what he does in chapter 3, he takes especially that last paragraph in chapter 3 and talks about how God has set up Jesus Christ, and he did this publicly to tell the world, saying, hey, I'm putting my son on a public cross, and I'm putting him in the middle of history, and I'm putting him out there so you can see him, to let everybody know. I'm not doing this in a closet or on an island somewhere. So you can see that he is what is the only route through the burning house. Okay, now what does that mean? I'm with you, but how do I get through, like, using Christ to get out from God's wrath? So some people, they say, okay, well, I got to work hard at it. I got to do this and I got to do that. I'm just, instead of serving God, I got to serve Jesus. That's not what he says in the book of Romans. He says when Christ died on that cross and he satisfied the wrath of God, he satisfied the wrath of God for people who come through Christ believing that what Christ did at that cross, he did in my place. Now, that place thing is very, very important. He took my place. In other words, instead of Jesus telling you in the house, hey, come follow me, let's get out of the burning house this way, he says, in the burning house, he says, one of us is going to have to die in this burning house. See, this is what people don't quite get. They think Jesus is a great example to follow out the burning house. I got to follow Jesus out the burning house. Hey, look, Jesus, we both made it. Hey, that's great. No, it doesn't work that way. Jesus says, the burning house is designed to take one of us, but it can't, you know, I'm going to lay down my life for you if you want me to. If not, you're going to get burned up in the house. And so what happens is, so it becomes a substitution thing here. So by faith, this is where it comes into faith. I can't work for this. I can't, you know, get God to like me because I happen to like Jesus. It didn't work that way. Hey, I like Jesus. Hey, I'm liking Jesus, so I'm good. No, it didn't work that way. I have to believe that Christ took whatever it was, the wrath that God had for me, Christ took that. He's going to stay behind. So it comes to the burning building, and he says, I'm going to, here, take this, it's of mine, and go out the door. I'm going to stay behind and take the heat and take the flames for you. I have to accept that and say, okay. And if I take this blanket you put and I walk outside and I meet God, he's going to accept me? Yep, you got my blanket on. And I'm going to stay behind and die in the flames. Wait, whoa. Now, if I get all bravado and all this and say, well, I can't have that. then I'm in pride. He says, well, if you don't go out and you don't take the blanket, then you're still in the wrath of God. Because this is how God set it up. God set it up so that when you believe in me, I'll receive all the glory because your entire salvation from God's wrath depended on what I did for you and what I gave you. So when push comes to shove, this is the whole thing about Romans 3 all the way running through Romans 8 is about, is that this isn't my work. This is what someone has given me by way of blanket to be able to escape this fire blanket type of thing, that I can get outside and I can meet God and God accepts me because it's the blanket of Jesus Christ. And if I don't and try with my own blanket or try to help God out or help Jesus out or whatever, it isn't going to work. So this whole idea of from God in the realm of wrath, the gospel saves us from, is through Christ. If we do not understand this, or we make mistakes in this, or I try to work my way out of the burning house with God's wrath and everything and on my own terms, we're going to have some issues. God's wrath is still going to be on me because why? I did not honor the Son. This is how you honor the Son. You honor the Son by making the Son 100% benefactor, 100% giver of all things. Christ has to give me his forgiveness and he has to give me his righteousness. And by faith, all he says is, he didn't say, got to jump through five hoops of fire before I'll give it to you. He just says, believe it's yours. Here, it's a blanket. Here, take it. Take what I have and done, and you're as righteous as me before my heavenly Father. And so what makes this remarkable, and you get into the Romans chapter 4 with Abraham, he goes through the history and says, this is how everybody's been saved in the Old Testament. He wasn't saved by some works. He wasn't saved by Jesus saying, hey, come follow me. Let's work our way to get out of the house, and we'll kind of, you know, crawl our way through the crawl spaces and get out. He says it's never been done that way. Moses never preached that. Moses gave the law and stuff of this sort, but it was never meant. It was meant to point you to Jesus Christ. Because every time you'd crawl to try to get out the house, Moses shut the door and you couldn't get out the house. So you'd say, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get out the house. Lord, please save me. Ah, bingo. See, made you cry out to the Lord, huh? Perfect. That's exactly what Moses wanted you to do, so that you would trust God and his Son to get you out of the house. You'd have to trust. That's where faith comes in, you see. And so this whole idea of the gospel saving us from God and his wrath through Christ, this is, he works all this up through Romans chapter 8. Now, he goes through many things in Romans 7 with the law and goes through assurance and things of this sort and the ramifications in chapter 8. But this is sort of, I'm giving you the big lay of the land here. And then when he gets to number 3, 2, this is where we get to chapter 12, what kind of where we're at. In other words, now that I'm out of the house, now that I'm out of the burning house and I'm right with God, I'm wearing the blanket of Christ, the righteousness of Jesus Christ, now what? What does it look like now that I'm outside of the house and I'm saved from God's wrath and I'm with other Christians and things of this sort? Well, this is where he gets to Romans 12, and basically what he talks about is this whole idea of love. This is where he's really going to get into it, because he's going to talk about strong Christians, weak Christians. He's going to talk about how we handle the state, how do we deal with people who are our enemies, and the whole theme of having our bodies as a living and holy sacrifice and having minds that are transformed and wills that are confirmed to do God's will, it says in Romans chapter 12, 1 and 2, and spiritual gifts in chapter 12, 3 through 8, is so that we can come together and people can see, wow, look what a Christian this person is. And the reason why they can love so greatly is because they have been loved so greatly. And they believe that God gave them this great gift of love, they believe it, in Christ that saves them from the wrath of God. So they in turn mirror that love that God has given them by they giving it to other people, especially to people who don't deserve that love. They're enemies, you see. He says this in the latter part of chapter 12. So kind of working our way through the theme of the book, so to say, and getting to chapter 12, he moves into verse 9 of chapter 12 and says, let love be without hypocrisy. In other words, it has to be sincere. That little sentence is the theme for the everything else that comes after that. He's going to talk about it in chapter 13, verse 8. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. He's going to say it again in verse 10. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. He talks about how we behave during the daytime. He talks about in chapter 14 and 15 with weaker brethren, how we're supposed to treat them by way of service. But you serve people, why? Because you love them. That's why when he talked about spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, he moved into the love chapter of chapter 13. A Christian who cannot love is a Christian in word only who's still in the burning house. If you can't love, you're not saved. Now, I call love is serving people. And you can pronounce yourself a loving kind of person, but you're not the judge of yourself on that day. And love is a byproduct of how he has first loved us. So you see this in Ephesians, especially chapter 2, when God, being rich in mercy, he's done this and he saved us, so that now in chapter 4 of Ephesians, we walk in a manner worthy of this great love he's given to us, and we find ourselves loving the unlovable. This is where this comes from. You just can't start loving people. You have to have a basis and a premise that this thing all springs from. And so when we have difficulty loving people who are unloving, we have to go back and say, Lord, open my eyes to show me how I got saved from that burning house again, exactly what you had to do to save me. Because if we get short-sighted here, trust me, we'll get short-winded here when it comes to putting up with people, and we won't run with them like they need to be ran with, if that makes sense. So this is kind of the lay of the land of how Paul is moving this gospel from, through, and to, as he says in Romans chapter 11. Because Romans 9, 10, 11 are addressing the issue of the Jew, because that came up. Because remember, you got Jew and Gentile that's living in Rome together, and they're trying to function together. And part of that problem with them was this whole issue of, I guess God's kind of either dropped the ball when it came to the Jewish nation, or I guess they just sort of sinned their way out of his mercy and grace. And Paul refutes both of those things. So Romans 9, 10, 11 answers, it's kind of like a little parenthesis here, okay? But he kind of answers that question of, how does the Jew now, physical Jew, fit in with God's economy when it comes to this whole big thing when it comes to the gospel? Remember, Paul's a Jew from the tribe of Benjamin, and he's preaching this to Gentiles. And so it'd be very easy to say, yeah, I guess he kind of wrote those Jews off. And he goes, nope, God's got a plan with physical Jews. Oh, what, another nation or something? Nope. What he's going to do is he's going to save Jews in every generation. But he's going to save them the only way he's ever saved anybody, based on grace, by giving them Christ to believe in, and they're going to have that blanket to get out that door. It doesn't matter if you're a Jew getting out that door or you're a Gentile getting out that door. That's how people are saved. They're saved no other way. Doesn't matter how you put your pants on or what your heritage is, that's how you get saved. And when you get saved, the hallmark is that you find yourself loving God's people, 1 John, and you find yourself loving people who are very unlovable, enemies, because you were once an enemy, Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 8. So I'm kind of giving you these big broad brushes for the book of Romans. And then when he gets to Romans chapter 12, he moves into this whole idea of what sincere love looks like. If you're going to function as a body, as he says in chapter 12, 3 through 8, when it comes to gifts, it's got to be motivated by love. If it's not motivated by love, whether I can give my body to be burned and all this, it means nothing. Love means I look at you and consider your worth great. Greater than my energy, money, time, and all that at this moment, so that I can serve you. If I don't see that, I'm not going to be able to do that. How do I get that? I have a transformed mind, chapter 12, verse 2, and I have a body that I give in spiritual worship. But how do I do that? He says it in verse 1 of chapter 12. I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. This is the mercies of God. When you come out of that house and you've escaped with your life, and you've been given that blanket by that person that's said, here, take this, go. I'm taking your sins. I'm taking the flames. It's going to either be me or you, and I'm pushing you out. And you realize, that man saved my life. I'll never be the same again. Think about the people who've given to us during this flood, who've done all this work, who've done all this energy, and have given all these resources. I got to tell you, that's changed my heart toward those people. I'll never be the same toward those people again. Doesn't matter what they do. I mean, because there's a... It's not so much I got to pay them back, but they built and reached out and in love did something here in grace in gifting us like that blanket. And so the reaction is one of, I'll do anything for them, I'll do anything to help them. You know, pick on Randy coming up from Pensacola. You know, that guy ever needs anything in Pensacola, we're down there. I don't care if he wants us there or not, we're here. We're here to help him. I mean, that's what we do. That's just... He didn't mean to buy a indentured servant, but he bought one. He's got one now because he's helped us. He's helped us in such a great way. We've had churches up in Denton with Mac. We have, you know, Tim Conway's church, and all these different people have, I mean, sent money and time. I think of John, all the labors they've done. I mean, that just knits your heart to these people, and you're saying, wow, look what they've done. And they didn't have to do this. They could have just gone back into their house and lived their, you know, cozy little life, but they kind of rolled up their sleeves, and they took it upon themselves to do these things, and they're still doing these things. Look what great love they're doing. Why are they doing that? And if I was to ask them that, I bet they would tell me something about a blanket coming out of a burning house. See, this is how you're supposed to be thinking. You know, I was like this once, or I had this, and look what Christ has done for me. And now they're in a situation where they have a need. I can do that for them, you know, even if it's washing dishes in vinegar, right? Storing them like Claire's doing. You know, little bitty things, little things, big things. It's how is this motivated? It can't just be motivated by, well, you know, we want to do things because we're part of the Red Cross. You know, it's just, well, I just want to, I feel good about myself, and my mom raised me to be this way. See, that's not gospel. Gospel means this is why we do what we do, because I have been pushed out of a burning house and have been given safety. And so what he says here in verse 9, with love being without hypocrisy, and he goes through these little quick little shots of verbs of what he wants you to do in these participles, you know, doing pouring what is evil, clinging to what's good, devoted in brotherly love, giving preference to one another in honor. All this has to do, he's not trying to elaborate on anything. He just kind of scattershot. This is how a broad shot of what it means to have a reaction of what it has to transform a mind in verse 2 as a Christian, because you've been, when you are saved, your mind gets transformed. You see people in a whole different light. They're not just objects, or they're not just, you know, stepping stones to get someplace else. They are your ministry. They are the field that we move toward and we minister to. They're still in a burning house, many of them. And so we labor and we pray for them. We agonize before the Lord, saying, Lord, show them your grace. We're loving them by doing that. So whether we're praying for them, taking time and energy to do that, or we're taking our own resources of money and we're taking efforts and things of that sort to help people out, we're doing that so that, Lord, let them see our light of how we escaped in our love for them so that they will escape as well. Any questions? You understand we're going to the book of Romans here. Now, when we get into chapter 13, it talks about, you know, whether you're dealing with the state, you're dealing with people who are unlovable in the sense of enemies. Hey, look, that's not going to stop us when it comes to how we manifest that kind of love. That, because Christ reigns and rules how? Well, he's in heaven. He makes these big decisions and it causes the night. No, he rules this way. He takes broken things like us, and he says, you're going to love your enemies, and I'm going to bring them down. I'm going to topple them down because you're going to love them to such a degree, they're not going to be able to take it. I'm going to crumble them from the inside out. I'm not going to do it from the outside. I can do that. I can send an asteroid and destroy a country. I mean, you know, I'm going to do it through the weak things. I'm going to do it through you loving the unlovable, like I loved you when you were unlovable and gave you Christ. You're going to love them, and they're going to see the power. I mean, think about it. The Christians toppled the Roman Empire. I mean, no other country could defeat the Romans. But the Christians defeated the Romans. How did they do it? Bigger catapults? meaner bows and arrows? No. They loved these people. I mean, people would have nothing to do with this group. The Christians would come in and love them. And they would endear those people to them. And they brought the gospel to them and taught them how to love. Until eventually, I mean, they had 10 separate edicts of persecutions throughout the Roman Empire to kill all the Christians. They never could kill them. So finally, Constantine in, 13 and 3-something A.D. converted over to Christianity. He even got converted over. Now, you know, I don't think he was a Christian. But you could see the impact and the power that Christians were having in that scenario. And they were constantly being persecuted. They were constantly being treated as enemies. You would tend to think they'd want to fight back because they weren't, everything was getting, they were experiencing great injustice. No. I got to say, from a burning building, when it comes to God's wrath, if I'm saved from God and his wrath, anything less than that is easy. Man's wrath, government's wrath, okay. I can yawn at that because God's the big elephant in the room, we would say. That's got to be dealt with. And once he's dealt with, everything else is footnote size. And it means that through that gospel, I can love them to become Christians like me. So he talks about that in chapter 13. 14 and 15, he gets into this whole idea of weak brother and strong brother. You got Jews who have certain scruples. Gentiles don't have those scruples. He says, you're going to have to fit together. How are you going to do that? well, we're going to outbeat them. We're going no, you don't do that. You serve each other. You serve. So that if you're serving somebody who believes keeps one day out of seven, you'll seek a way to love him and serve him and not beat him up for his convictions. That's basically what he tries to say in 14 and 15. And then 16, he kind of goes through a litany of people that he wants to greet because he knows them already in Rome as he gives his parting shot, so to say, before he closes his letter. That's the from, through, and to of the latter part of Romans chapter 11, where he says all things, including the gospel, are from him, through him, and to him. And I would expect the gospel to follow that same course of action. So here's the practical. This is what it looks like. And people can concentrate on this and say, well, I just need to love more. And then they divide it from this, and they're not Christians. They might be nice people. They're religious people, but they're not Christians. But when you start here and you get to here, you're going to produce number three. And if you don't, then you need to go back to one and two. One, two, and three are a set. He doesn't say from him and to him are all things. From him, through him, and to him. He doesn't segment them out. All three in the sovereignty of God in Romans chapter 11, verse 36, have to be together. For from him and through him and to him are all things. That's why it says to him be the glory forever, because there's not a section in here that God isn't the one that's doing all these things. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit that gives us his spirit so that we can love. Any questions on what we've shared? Anything you don't understand? So, once again, for us as Christians, this is kind of a redo. But for those who are not Christians, I mean, obviously the admonition would be, well, look, this is your biggest problem right now. Your biggest problem is, we say, the white elephant in the room. I mean, because he should take up all the oxygen. It's like, you got a God problem. On whatever kind of problem you have a God problem. God's the issue here. Nothing else is the issue. There's not, the devil's not the issue. Even sin's not the issue. Sin is an issue because God's an issue. There's no such thing as sin unless there was, unless there's God. There's no God in existence. There's no such thing as sin. So sin has its direct ties to God, and it's a personal thing. So you got to deal with the God issue. And how do you deal with the God issue? God has dealt with it. Imagine that. He didn't say, well, you better figure out a way to make me happy. He didn't do that because you can't figure out a way. There's no way that's going to make him happy. He says, I have a way, and it's the only way that makes me happy. And it's when you honor my son, Jesus Christ, and you trust in him to take away my wrath and get you out the door. Then you have honored me. And then you have escaped my wrath. And how you know I've done that? It won't be left up to you to say, I think I have. I think I'm a Christian. No, we'll be able to see it. You'll have love for the brethren, love for the things of God, love for his word, love to spend time with him now. I'm not afraid of him anymore. I want to spend time with him. All these things come into play because these first two have been satisfied. Anybody else before we close? Anything you don't understand? Anything that makes sense? That's the book of Romans. Isn't it amazing? On that one little passage of the three prepositions here. It's what it means to be a Christian. Let's pray. Oh.